Okay, so my name is Franz Kurfes, and I'll try to keep it somewhat light, not too many technical things. No code, as far as I recall, because I know you've seen enough of that stuff for today. So I'll be talking about our experiences with some projects that we did with students over the last two quarters, starting in the winter quarter of this year. I'll first tell you a little bit about the background, so Cal Poly, myself, the students, what courses we're taking. Then I'll give you a few examples of the projects that the students were working on, and then the experiences that we gathered from that. I'll also give you a few examples of projects that students are continuing to work on. So let's look at Cal Poly first. So what we call Cal Poly SLO, or Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, officially is called California Polytechnic State University San Luis Obispo. So that's a mouthful, and nobody ever says the whole name. We are a California State University school located in the Central Coast, San Luis Obispo, so about halfway between here and Los Angeles. We have about 19,000 students, almost all of them undergraduates. We have some master's programs, but no PhD programs. You may be aware that California has a deal between the University of California and California State University System. The UC has all the graduate programs and is research-focused. California State is focused on teaching and has practically no PhD programs. So, a few more things about Cal Poly. Oh, okay, so this is just a duplicate with a few pictures. So, we have seven or six and a half colleges, so agriculture, architecture, and environmental design, then business, engineering, liberal arts, science, and mathematics, and the last one, University Center for Teacher Education, is kind of in between. It used to be its own college, but it's being transitioned to something else. We also, in our computer science program, have about 1,000 students, depending on how you count them, because we're sharing a program with computer engineering. We also have a master's program of about 80 students. Some of them are undergraduates that are transitioning into the graduate program. We have about 20 professors, not as many as we would like to have. Hopefully, we'll have a few more soon. We also have lecturers, about 10, and then some graduate students who help us with the teaching. And that's our faculty at work. Well, unfortunately, not every day. That was a retreat a few years ago. So normally, we're not at the beach. We're not like UC Santa Barbara directly on the beach. We're about 15 miles from the beach. So if you want to go surfing, you'll have to get in your car or on your bike and take a little trip. So here's some background on myself. Originally, I'm from Germany. You probably guessed from my accent already that I'm not a native US citizen. And I got my degrees in computer science from the Technical University in Munich. Then I spent some time as a postdoc here in California at UC Berkeley at the International Computer Science Institute. Then went back to Germany, then to New Jersey, New Jersey Institute of Technology, then Montreal. And then finally, my wife and I saw the light and decided to come back to California. And I've been with Cal Poly since 2000. Okay, so now a little more interesting stuff. So our computer science, computer engineering, and software engineering curriculum has about 180 units, so that's pretty much standard around here. It typically takes 4+ years. There are some students who make it in four. How many did you take?
4.25.
4.25, hey, that's pretty good. Six. Oh, okay, that was long ago. That doesn't count. At that time, they didn't care how long it took. Now they do. So we also have a philosophy of learn by doing. So what this means for computer science is that practically all of our courses have lab components. There are maybe two or three courses, theory courses, that don't have a lab components, but all of the other ones have. In almost all of those courses, we also have projects. In many of them, team projects, usually about five students or so. And in all of the courses that I'm teaching at the higher levels, we do student projects, usually quarter-long student projects. So we also have a quarter-based system, which means that it's very fast-paced. So we have about 8 to 10 weeks for doing those projects, and sometimes that's a bit of a problem. I'll come back to that later when we talk about specifically what we're doing here. So here are the courses that I specifically use the Tizen devices in. So the primary one was what we call CSE 484, user-centered design and development. That's the first one in a series of user-centered human-computer interaction courses. And usually about 60, 70, 80 students take it. Last quarter, I had 76 or so, I think. Originally, our tentative plan was to have all of the students use the Tizen devices that Samsung generously provided to us. But unfortunately, we only got them, I think, about a week ago or so before the quarter started. So it was a little impractical, and about half of the students ended up doing projects related to the Tizen devices. I also am using the Tizen devices in one of my current courses. That's a graduate course, CSE 581, Knowledge and Usability. So that's a combination of artificial intelligence and human-computer interaction course. And we have 36 students in this course, so this is quite a bit more than we normally have. And about maybe a third of them are doing projects that are somewhat related to the Tizen devices. Then there's one more course taught by my colleague, Professor Kosmut, and that's an operating systems course. And he's using the Tizen devices for a lab assignment, and the students are probably sweating over it right now as we're talking. So he distributed, I believe, it last week or the week before, and the deadline is this week, and that's why he also couldn't be here. So right now, Cal Poly is what we call in dead week, so that's the week before finals, and the students are in kind of their zombie state. They walk by you, don't recognize you, and then do other things that they normally are not prone to do. So here's the typical student backgrounds that we can expect. Almost all of the students in the classes that I'm talking about are computer science, computer engineering, or software engineering students. They usually have very strong programming skills, right? Good, okay. Then they have varying levels of mobile development experience. So some of them took courses in mobile development that we have at Cal Poly. Some have never programmed a mobile device before. We occasionally also have some students from other disciplines that are interested in user-centered design and development, and they may not have any program development experience at all. Our students also usually have a pretty good program, a pretty good background in team-oriented work. So nowadays, they start doing team-based work in the very first course that they take at Cal Poly, and it continues pretty much throughout their career at Cal Poly. However, we have one problem with user-centered design issues, and that is that they typically focus on functionality, not usability. So what I frequently call it is for geeks by geeks, and not for geeks by ordinary people. Some people also call it for nerds by nerds, but I prefer geeks. That's a little less derogatory. So what I see as my mission in that 484 course is to get the students out of that mentality of trying to cram as much functionality as possible into whatever user interface is available. So we have to retrain them a little, and for some of them it sticks, and for some of them they just do the geek, for geeks by geeks thing, no matter what you tell them. Okay, so now the student project samples. So I'm starting with the ones that were relatively straightforward and where we didn't really have any serious problems, except for the fact that none of us knew much about Tizen. So before we started this, I knew about Tizen. I knew it was kind of a mobile operating system. I knew that it was Linux-based, but I had never looked at it before. And just in this week that we had the Tizen devices, I did a little bit of, I think I did the Hello World program or something like that. I did a quick check with the students when we started that class, and there were, I believe, two students who had heard of Tizen. Everybody else had no idea of what Tizen is. So this is one of the student teams that did a game. It's Memories Lost, one of those platformer games inspired by the Mario games. And they used essentially HTML5 plus a few gaming open source libraries. They started out with Enchant.js, and I don't remember what problem they ran into, but then they switched over to a library called Quintus. They initially also tried to implement it as a native Tizen app, but quickly switched over to HTML5 because it was much easier and required much less overhead. This particular team also did not really have any particular background in web development, so they had to pick up HTML, HTML5, JavaScript, and CSS at the same time. They succeeded in having a functional implementation on multiple browsers, and as far as I know, they're working on a commercialization, trying to port it to iOS and Android. I haven't had a chance to talk to them recently, so I don't know how far they are. It should be, but I wasn't able to check with them. Actually, I sent them an email a few days ago, but I haven't heard back, which is not too surprising. So I also didn't get it to run. I must have an old version, or I don't know what it is. So this is a screenshot of the game. You can see that it's a relatively simple platformer game. This is typically what you can expect in 8 to 10 weeks of student development at in classes like I'm doing. This one here was a little bit more challenging. So this is a turret defense game, and you need to shoot down enemies, enemy planes before they blow you up. They also did HTML5, CSS, and they actually got the EnchantJS to work. They also got it to work on multiple platforms and browsers. However, they made their lives a little bit more difficult than necessary because they also participated in a hackathon that was in week 6 or so of the quarter. So the first 5 weeks, they just did some practice development of game platforms without really knowing what their game was. So the condition for that hackathon was you could not show up with a predefined topic. You had to come up with your own topic during the hackathon. So they did a lot of the implementation during that hackathon, but of course, as usual during the hackathon, they didn't really get a functional piece of software together, so they continued working on it afterwards. And again, they are looking at a commercialization after porting it to iOS and Android, and unfortunately, the prime developer there had some health issues, so they are not as far as they wanted to be. So now, okay, so again, screenshots here. You can see the planes and the defense turrets. So here are the apps where we ran into more serious problems. So this one is a messaging app and inspired by Snapchat. You probably already recognize that. And the variation that they had, of course, is that they tried to develop it on Tizen, and they added a little twist. So after sending the image to the recipient, the device takes an image of the reaction of the recipient and returns that to the sender. So the idea is that you send them gross or surprising or whatever pictures and then capture the reaction and return it to the recipient. They had a bit of fun with it, but they also realized that, of course, there's a tremendous potential for doing stupid stuff, and they had to turn it down a little bit. So they also succeeded implementing it in HTML5, CSS, and JavaScript, but they also tried to incorporate a speech-to-text conversion API. I don't really know why they wanted that. They probably wanted to do speech-text messaging in addition to just text messaging, and decided to switch over to Android for that reason. After they switched over, they actually got an app with a relatively decent accuracy, depending on what underlying text-to-speech functionality you use. They used the Android Google API for text-to-speech conversion. The future of this one is somewhat unclear. They are considering porting it to iOS and Android and possibly also continuing development on the Tizen platform. Okay, now, this one is one that did not really work in Tizen. So the idea behind the BikeLaner app is that a few of the students were into biking, or they at least used their bikes for commuting purposes, and there are a few rough stretches of bike lanes around Cal Poly. So what they did was essentially take a smartphone, strap it on the device, and capture the vibrations and analyze the vibrations to develop something like a heat map of the bike lanes. So the higher the bumps, the higher the heat. And this turned out quite well. They got it to work in Android. Unfortunately, they weren't able to get the accelerometer data out of the device with the Tizen platform. this points to one of the issues that we ran into. Nobody had a lot of experience doing that. They, of course, being students, they tried immediately the World Wide Web, trying to figure out if there's something out there. We weren't able to find anything relevant, and so after a while, they gave up and switched over to Android. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So the initial attempt was native. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't really know at that time, so this was in January, February, I don't know what the status of the documentation is. I talked to one of them a couple of weeks ago, and they said if they had to do it now, they probably would be able to pull it off because there's much more information available by now. So they got a proof of concept developed, implemented in Android. It was fairly clear from the initial experiments that we did that it would be working if you strap the mobile device directly on the bike. It was not clear if it also works if you put it in your pocket. It turned out that it worked fairly well, and it even works if you put it in your backpack. In your backpack, it's a little trickier, depending on what you have in your backpack. If you have heavy books in your backpack, it's a little iffy. If there's nothing in your backpack, then your smartphone might bounce around too much and you get too much bad surface information. But if it's reasonably full and your smartphone doesn't bounce around too much, it even works in your backpack. So with this particular one, we are also in contact with the local bike club and the biking community, and we're considering taking this a step further. So instead of just one individual using this bike laner app, if a community uses it, then we can collect information through crowdsourcing and essentially forward it to the city or the county and tell them, hey, here are the stretches of bike lanes that are in bad shape. While we were working on this, we found out that other people, of course, have similar ideas. There's an app out there, apparently already for cars, that do surface of road mapping. And there are a few people who suggested to use the accelerometer in smartphones for similar purposes, but we haven't really seen anything working. I also talked to a few people here at the conference from Strava and MapMyRide and contacted the Garmin people for possible collaborations. It's unclear where this will go, but at least it's something that we're considering for future development. So here's a quick series of screenshots. You probably can't see very much. This interface, of course, is also very minimal. You essentially start the application. You could integrate it with a routing or biking application like Strava or MapMyRide. They didn't really attempt to do that. And then you stop it and you can get some vital statistics. If you want to, then you can also see the road surface as you're rolling along. But, of course, you're not supposed to look at your device while you're biking. It's self-evident and a quick learning experience if you do it once too often. So that's one of the ones where we had difficulties, and here's another one where we also had difficulties, basically the same problem that I mentioned earlier. So they tried to do a note-taking app with voice-to-text conversion and gave up because they didn't get that functionality to work. So they also switched over to Android, and they also tried to initially implement it as a Tizen native app. Now, this one actually is continuing in the current quarter, and they switched over from a generic note-taking app to helping disabled students in collaboration with our Disability Resource Center. And they actually now have something working where you essentially do something like what I'm doing right now. You use a microphone for the instructor. The microphone communicates with your mobile device or your computer. You record what the instructor is saying, and then live you get a transcription as a Google Doc, and they also added a little twist to it. If somebody wants to help a disabled student, they can live edit the document and correct any errors that come out of it. It's not quite stable enough for release, but we're planning to make that available. There were a few hiccups of the coordination between the speech to text conversion and getting it into a document turned out to be a little trickier than initially envisioned, but they finally got it to work. So, yeah. So here are a few more projects. Okay. Yeah, this is the continuation, so I just mentioned that. And then here are a few more projects. So one of them is a chatbot for the CSC department. So if you visit our homepage of the CSC department, then of course you can look up all kinds of things, office hours for professors, senior project ideas, and so on. And their idea was to use a chatbot with a speech-to-text conversion interface, so you can essentially ask your computer or your mobile device, when does Professor Kurfes have office hours? They also switched to Android from Tizen because of the same issues, speech-to-text conversion. Another one was a job estimation software, and they just used HTML5 as the display and used just Tizen to validate it. Now, here's the one that's currently going on. So Dr. Kosmut is working on a Tizen lab assignment. The light version that he's doing right now is to develop an app with two versions. So one that is relatively resource intensive, the other one that has light requirements, and the students need to switch automatically between the resource intensive one and between the light one. He had to modify that because one obstacle that we discovered before we published it was that the Tizen platform development tools are only available in Ubuntu, and we don't have access for all of our students to Ubuntu development platform. So we had to switch over to the just the SDK that is available for all of the platforms. But hopefully this will not be a serious problem, and we're planning to use this in future assignments, similar assignments. So our experience overall, HTML5, CSS, JavaScript was no problem for the students. Even the ones that did not have any experiences were quickly able to pick it up and use it and do relatively decent development of mobile apps. The Tizen OS also was fairly straightforward. Most of them were reasonably familiar with Linux and variations of Linux, so they didn't really have many conceptual issues. I had to work a little bit to convince them that Tizen is not dead on arrival as a mobile development platform. I finally was more successful when I could tell them, well, it's also intended for wearables, smartwatches, and similar devices, and that convinced them to spend some energy on it. One problem was the limited availability of apps, so they couldn't really look at what was available, what other people were doing at that time. So this, again, was in January, February. By now, there's more out there. And we also had some functionality and usability issues. So my initial plan was to also do a usability evaluation of Tizen as it existed at that time and a few sample apps. But unfortunately, the team that initially showed some interest switched over to something else. Then this is the issue where we had a bit of a problem. So this was development and support. We had difficulties finding information. Again, that was back in January and February. By now, the situation is much better. There were relatively few examples available that were useful for us. The students relied heavily on the Tizen.org website and frequently didn't find what they were looking for. And one thing that I could not really get them to do was to engage with the Tizen community.
The problem there, right, is that they need to get used to the fact that that's the way that software is developed in an open source world.
Yeah.
And it's to their benefit to get used to working that way, because that's the way they're going to have to work when they graduate.
That's right. Yeah. And unfortunately, with very few exceptions, so I believe there were a handful of people maybe who already had some experience with open source software development and were used to that model. The large bulk of the students just didn't get it. And so they spun their wheels trying to find the information, fooling around, trying out various things. It didn't work. And as a consequence, as you could see, many of the projects switched over to Android because that was easier for them.
Would it help to have somebody from the industry come and explain to them how the open source development model
works? Yes. Right, certainly, that would be very helpful. And our initial plan was to have somebody from Samsung visit us during the course of that quarter, but unfortunately that didn't work out. So that's the experiences, and then here's a bit of future work. So I'm currently working with a few students on virtual architectural models. They are drooling over the Google Tango device and hoping that they can get their hands on one of them. I assume you've heard about it. It's a smartphone that has two stereo camera built-in and infrared camera built-in, and so you can do 3D mapping by just waving your phone around the room, and you get a relatively decent 3D model of the room. So what we will do with that is a few aspects. One of them is the conversion of point clouds to 3D models. That's probably not going to happen on the mobile device. We'll also do spatial cognition for analysis and utilization of models. That's probably also not going to happen on the mobile devices. But the integration with the Internet of Things and persons, as Monica pointed out earlier today, is something that is closely correlated with what we're doing here. And we're planning to use Tizen devices and possibly also the smart gear watches for that. A few more project ideas. So there's a travel journal that Dr. Kosmoud is working on, continuation of ongoing projects. Games, of course, are always popular with students, and a few of the students took the experiences that we had and developed further games. And now that I have at least one Samsung Gear 2 device to develop on, I assume we'll have some students working on one of those. Okay, so, wait, there was another slide. Okay, my acknowledgement slide unfortunately seems to have gotten censored, so I'd like to thank Guy Martin from Samsung for making the devices available, and all of the students at Cal Poly who put all of this effort into the projects that they were working on. Any questions? Yeah.
Did you get any students interested in doing device development? Like not just application on the existing device,
right,
but figuring out what kinds of devices I might want to do?
That's something that we probably can answer after this week, because the students from the operating systems class will probably be more inclined to show interest in device development. The students in my class, in the user-centered design and development class, usually are more interested in application development, front-end development. There are some students occasionally from the computer engineering program that are more interested in direct device development, hardware development, that is user-facing. And there might be some possibilities there. Yeah.
I'm just curious, when you mentioned the credit units, academic units.
Yeah. Oh, that applies to all of our CSC students. Yeah.
I was wondering, these applications that you showed us, are they open source? And which open source licenses do you encourage your students to use?
That varies quite a bit. So most of them use GitHub and make them available in some manner or another. The typical problem that we have at the end of the quarter, they all say, okay, we'll continue to work on it, and then we'll make it available once we have cleaned up the code, and that never happens. Or it happens not on a regular basis. So by the time they are available, it will probably be at least several weeks or maybe months after the courses are over. Right now, if you get hold of the slide deck that I used, the titles of the classes link to overviews of the projects, and some of the students have their code available through those, if you're interested. Yeah. Yeah.
What kind of support do you get from Samsung?
Okay, so looking back, the main support that we got were the devices, and I think a few of our students contacted some of your engineers via email and got some support, but it was quite limited.
Well, the idea, and so in retrospect, we probably should have done a better job of sort of integrating the students with the dev alias, for example, and the information there, because the idea behind setting the devices partially was to get the students used to working in an open source style model where they're collaborating with the community. Part of it was I was on travel too, so I couldn't come and talk to your class at the time. I had to be in Korea or something. But yeah, I think that was the idea, was to get the students used to working in a model where they have to find some of this stuff for themselves and to get some support from Samsung.
Mm-hmm. So typically for a project or a set of projects like the one I talked about, what we would do is, let's say, 2 months or maybe 3 months in advance, we would identify contacts at the company that we're collaborating with. Those contacts would meet with me. We would talk about the projects. And in the very first week of classes, a few engineers, or at least one engineer and one administrative person, would come to the class and present the project to the teams. For some reason, we had, I think, maybe 3 weeks or so lead time over the holiday break just before the new year, so it just didn't work out that well.
We had logistical things to get in the devices, so once we got them the devices, the idea was to get them the devices and maybe do this first run of this, mm-hmm. and then actually be able to do it in a more organized way, if you will, for future classes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so of course, the best way is probably to get a master's, because that gives you a very strong foundation. But that's realistically also going to take you 2 or 3 years, because you may have to catch up with some of the programming courses. So in our experience, when students with a non-computer science major come into our master's, they have to do catch up for at least 1 year, and then another year, a year and a half, 2 years to do the master's level work. So if you can afford that time, then that's probably the best one. If you want to do it with minimal time, then maybe what you could do is just pick up something from Code Academy and not necessarily become a programmer, but become somebody who, let's say, has design experience but can talk to people like Jorge and Patrick, the programmers. And that's frequently quite successful, because that leads to collaboration that involves multiple people, and that's what currently is quite important in the mobile domain. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
In an academic sense, you have to grade the students.
Right.
And of course, they come cheap.
Yeah.
On the other hand, we're talking about open source development, and we encourage people to collaborate.
Yeah.
How mm-hmm. would you put it together, the need to graduate, need to have independent work with
yeah.
collaboration with the outside, mm-hmm. taking open source, existing mm-hmm. code, integrating?
Right, okay.
Can you just give me an idea from your point of view
yeah.
how you would...
Right, okay, so for a class like the one I talked about, the user-centered design and development class, there are two main components to the grades for the students. One of them, obviously, is the project that they work on, and it obviously has some drawbacks. First of all, it's team-based. So unless I figure out who did what, and I have strong indications that some people slacked off considerably, I will give everybody on the team the same grade. However, since I had some bad experiences in the past with classes that only rely on team-based work as the grade, I also give some individual assignments. The assignments usually can be incorporated into the teamwork quite easily. So for that particular class, for example, the students either they look at development tools that are useful and current in the mobile domain. They do storyboards or design sketches that they can do individually. Then they do usability evaluations at various stages, where they also can do some work individually. So I try to have a combination of individually graded work and team graded work. Now, even if you assume that everybody does a decent job on the team, grading such projects is inherently difficult, because I don't really have enough insight with, I don't know, I had 20 teams or so, to know how well the students implemented their stuff. So I rarely look at their code. I just look at the outcome. And frequently, what I look at most intensively is the documentation and not the actual product. So if somebody is smart, they put a lot of effort. Now, don't tell this to the current students. They put a lot of effort in the documentation. They can do a relatively sloppy job on the actual implementation. And some students, of course, also get away with not doing their share of the teamwork. But that's hard to avoid. Okay?
Thank you.
You're welcome.